start off Wednesday night class, when you're teaching a class and the first thing everybody sees is two baptism, it takes all the pressure off the class. It's a great night. I could trip all over myself up here and it's not going to matter. So a lot of pressure got taken off there. We're starting a new series of lessons. You're going to have teachers rotated throughout. And the title of this series is Faith's Hall of Fame. Faith's Hall of Fame. And we're going to hit on me. I'm just going to give you the overview. We're going to talk a little bit about faith. Then over the next several weeks, we'll hit on the inductees to Faith's Hall of Fame, which I'm going to give you a little quiz here in a second. We're going to see how many of them we can get. And, oh, nope, he is here. Okay, so we're going to get them all. And then we'll finish up the last three or four with just discussing other examples of faith in the Bible and things of that nature. But first thing, if you had to pick a Faith Hall of Fame, and we're making the inductory class, I'll give you a hint. There's 10 names. 10 names according to this series. So start throwing them out. Let's see if we can get them. Okay, so we got Abraham. Very good. Noah, good job. We do not have Jeremiah. We do have Moses. Joseph, yes. Okay. Hopefully I don't get hit by lightning. Jesus is not included on this list. But I think we were talking about characters from the Bible. I think it's Old Testament. I think we're going Old Testament. There is no Daniel, believe it or not. Nope. Jacob? No Elijah. No Samson. We got a Joshua. No Gideon. We have a Rahab. And then we have two that are going together, Abel and Enoch. And then the last one is Isaac. So according to this, this is their 10. But from what you guys are saying, they left out about 10 or 15 more. So we're going to have to expand the introductory class. Abel and Enoch are the first lesson next week. Two of them together, yeah. Because I was ignoring you. Yes, sorry. Sorry. Too many words. But just to get us started, an introduction to faith, and I'd like to read a quote from A.W. Tozer. This is from his book, The Root of the Righteous. And when I read this, I just think this is really neat. Let me read this to you. A real Christian is an odd number. He feels supreme love for one who has never, for one he has never seen, talks familiarly every day to someone he cannot see, expects to go to heaven on the virtue of another, empties himself in order to be full, admits he is wrong so he can be declared right, goes down in order to get up, is strongest when he is weakest, richest when he is poorest, and happiest when he feels worst. He dies so he can live, forsakes in order to have, gives away so he can keep, sees the invisible, hears the inaudible, and knows that with passeth knowledge. And I just thought that was awesome, because that's really good way to describe it. The more we give away, the more we get. So the less we have, the more we have. So I just thought that was a really great way to start off the lesson and to really get us into thinking about faith. I guess first thing, can you define faith? Anybody think they have a definition of faith? Not one single person in this congregation doesn't know. I'm sorry, go ahead. Again, I hope I don't get hit by lightning. I've never seen that movie. So, sorry. I know. Sorry. Okay, so say the first part again, leaving off the movie I haven't seen. Believing in things when common sense tells you not to. Anybody else? Believing in something you've never seen with your own eyes. Okay, is that pretty much where you were going to go? Okay. One thing that is pointed out, much of what is really positive thinking or optimism is passed off as faith. How many times do you talk to somebody who's not a Christian, somebody who doesn't go to church and says, I have faith, you know, everything's going to work out? Is that person expressing the faith that we have? So what makes our faith, the faith that we share, true faith, as opposed to someone who just thinks good luck's going to come their way? Based on a body of knowledge, discipline, the Bible. Based on somebody who has a track record coming through. Anybody else? One thing that is pointed out, which I hadn't thought of before I started studying, to believe something in spite of evidence is really superstition. If you look up superstition, that's to believe in something in spite of evidence. Okay, I'm very superstitious because I coach and we're just wired that way. Okay, so I always think if we haven't lost a game in a month, then whatever shirt and pants I'm wearing that same shirt and pants every game and, you know, all that stuff. Okay, we had a very good season this year and we won a lot of games in a row and it got really old wearing that pants and shirt, but we kept doing it. Okay, so that's superstition, that's not faith. So how can I determine whether or not my faith is superstition or is it really faith? And what is pointed out here, and I hadn't thought about because I wouldn't have been able to define this before I started studying, was the object of faith is what is all important. What are we putting our faith in? What is our faith directed towards? Right. And if that's what we're putting our faith in, then that's true faith. And it speaks to what Ken brought up. Someone who's proven track record that he comes through again and again and again and again. Okay, so that's the difference between faith and superstition and optimism, just blind optimism. Now, I also happen to think that because of my faith, it makes me extremely optimistic. I always seem to look at the bright side of things, but, you know, my glasses always half full. And I think faith is the biggest reason for that. My faith is the biggest reason for that. It is the object of faith that makes a believer's faith real and powerful. So it is our belief in God and the fact that He sent Jesus that makes our faith what it is. And our belief that not necessarily good things, but whatever happens was what God wanted to happen. And so having faith in Him releases me from a whole lot of responsibility and takes a lot of pressure off me. And it's my job just to go. So having faith can take away a lot of worries. True faith. If I put that faith in the object that it should be put behind. True faith is obeying God regardless of our feelings, circumstances, or consequences. Anybody have an example where you put your faith in something where everybody else told you were crazy and you just said, well, this is what God wants me to do, and you went ahead and did it? Pam did it when she said yes to marrying me. So, anybody have an example? I'll tell you a funny story. And I wouldn't say this is, looking back on it, I can say it was faith in God, but Pam and I didn't start attending church regularly until Pam and I were married, or I guess we started dating, but once we were married and got serious and decided to have children, that's when we really started going to church, and then we were baptized after that in the Church of Christ. But when Pam and I, she was finishing medical school, and I was finishing college, and I was going to move to where she was finishing medical school, and she was going to finish her last year, and then we were going to go wherever her residency matched. And I knew I was moving there for at least 4 months. Easy. Okay? And I did exactly that much work in making sure I had a job. Okay, I was finishing college, then I was going to work at a summer camp, and then Pam and I drove down the East Coast, ended up in Florida and took a cruise, and then we were coming back and she was going to start medical school, and then I was moving up there, so I needed to find a job. And on our drive down, when, you know, we got to talking, and Pam, who is that, you know, was always very non-combative, very reserved, very, you know, mature, like you see her now. And but she finally just snapped in the car and said, "I can't believe, you know, you've been moving here for 4 months. You don't have a job." And I looked at her and I said, "Stuff just works. Stuff has always just worked out for me. I don't know why. It just does. I just don't worry about it. And I show up and stuff happens." "Well, you can't live like that. It's not going to work. That's a bunch of hogwash. You're not a kid anymore. You got to start planning." So anyway, long story short, we get to Temple, Texas. And I put in some applications at McDonald's and a couple of restaurants and stuff. And I'm calling around local school districts to get put on the substitutes list. And I call Rogers ISD, which is a 2A high school. They got one blinking stoplight that blinks red after like 10 o'clock or blinks yellow. You don't even have to stop. Okay, you can just drive right through. It's about 15 miles east of where we were living in Temple. And Pam's off at medical school and I'm at home and I'm calling around, and the lady in the office picks up, the lady in the central office, and she says, "Oh, no, you know, we're all good on teachers. I'll put you on the sub list." And I'm literally pulling the phone away from my ear. She says, "Oh, we don't have a basketball coach, though." "Okay, well, can I talk to your athletic director?" She connects me to the athletic director. I drive out there. I am 25, and this guy's like 28. It's his first job. They've got 8 coaching positions for the entire 7th grade through 12th grade. The whole school is like this building. Kindergarten starts at one end and 12th grade's on the other. Okay, and the high school is like a hallway. And so he says, "Well, we got 7 coaches. None of us want to coach basketball, so I'm going to watch you for a month. And if I think you can handle it, you'll be our head basketball coach." And here's how things work back then in Texas. I'm certified in PE and in math. He said, "You may have to teach history." Okay. All right, I guess I'll read the book before I come to school every day. So anyway, he goes, "Okay, well, you're hired." I don't speak to a principal. I don't speak to the math department head, nothing. Okay, the football coach hires me. I move back into the locker room, and I start numbering shirts that are going to go out to 2-a-days the next day. Anyway, so I get home, and Pam walks in the door, and I'm just sitting there, you know, knowing what I'm about to say. And she says, "So what happened today?" I said, "Oh, you know, I put in a couple of applications. Thank you. That's how I know this is going quickly. Applications, a couple restaurants, McDonald's." Said, "Oh, yeah, by the way, I'm now the head basketball coach at Rogers High School, 50 miles east of here." And she stopped and she looked at me. She goes, "All right." Said, "I get." So, and the funny thing is now, like, you want to talk about faith, we've done a complete 180 now. Okay, she's the most easygoing, everything's going to work out, don't worry about it, everything's fine. And I'm like, okay, we got to make sure everything. So, anywho, but faith is having that kind of, I mean, that's the kind of story where if I was the man I am now then I would have believed that I wouldn't have said everything just works out for me. I would have said, God's going to take care of it. Okay, this is where we need to be, and God's going to take care of it, and then everything would have worked out. And that's what we do now, and it works. And it's having that supreme faith that everything is going to be fine. May not be what we want, or it may not be, okay, I really like this to happen, and it doesn't. Well, it's also understanding that, okay, that's great. Then maybe that isn't what was supposed to happen. As being part of the youth minister committee, that we're trying to find a new youth minister. We've had, you know, a couple candidates that looked really good, and then they pulled out and didn't want to go through all the way. And, you know, that's disappointing, but at the same time, when I pray every night, I pray and I ask God to bring who he wants here, not who I want here. Don't make my life easier. Just whenever you're ready, we, especially Todd and Matt, would sure like another youth minister. So, faith is being sure of what we hope for. Faith is not wishful thinking. Faith is not, I hope it's going to happen. Faith is an absolute certainty, an absolute conviction that everything's going to be fine if we trust in God. True faith is an absolute confidence in God. Faith is living in a hope that is so real that it gives absolute assurance or confidence. Like what is referred to a lot in the notes that Cleo gives us. And Cleo, I'm staying right on par here. Is Cleo here? Word for word, okay? Not injecting anything. True faith is absolute confidence in God and a living hope that it gives absolute assurance and confidence. One thing that continually gets brought up here, and a direct quote is, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen." When you guys said, when I was asking, what is faith, and it's believing in something that's not there, common sense says that that couldn't happen, but I believe in it anyway. Okay, it's one thing to accept. Like, I can talk to somebody who doesn't go to church or isn't a Christian, and they can theoretically listen to me and think, okay, you think this guy named Jesus, you know, walked the earth and did this stuff. Like, they can understand the concept. But what they can't get is my absolute conviction that it really happened. Like, he really, like, the Red Sea, like, split, and people walked across on dry ground. That's where I lose people when I'm talking to them. Like, a couple of guys I coach with whenever we delve into something like this. That's where, because they can't see it. Like, even if they were standing there and saw the Red Sea split, I think they would have a hard time believing, because it takes them out of the equation of being, like, knowing, okay, I am for certain of this because I am sure. But because of the faith I have and the true conviction that I have that what I read in the Bible really happened, and what the Bible tells me I need to do, if I do it, everything's going to be fine. That type of faith is hard to get other people to understand sometimes. Anybody else ever get frustrated talking to other people about that?
No, I'm just going to mention, I think faith is reasonable. Because when you examine things and examine the things in the Bible, history of the Bible, but that's not of evidence. The evidence comes from the Word of God.
And how could I show that evidence? What could I do on a daily basis?
On a daily basis, well, I think you could show a consistent life that you live in faith.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an evidence to them that you're real. But they need more. It helps to show it, but it's also necessary for you to teach it for the Word of God.
And I guess one of the questions I was going to ask you, I was going to go later, but it kind of feeds into what we were just talking about here. When is a really good time for us, when we're out, when we're not amongst each other and telling each other what we already know or what we already believe, when we're out in the world, what's a great time for us to really show people a great example of faith? What kind of situation? Say it again. When bad things happen. Okay? Everybody's happy when good things happen. Okay? I think the best opportunity for us to really show faith is in those situations when what we didn't want to happen happens, or something really, really hard happens to us. And it's that opportunity and that moment, if they see us with that, I mean, we can be upset, but with still that conviction, that serene understanding of, yeah, it's bad, yeah, I'm unhappy, but it's going to be okay. I think that's our best opportunity to really exhibit faith with what we're talking about here. Not when something good happens, but when something bad happens. I got a good quote coming to you for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And also, yes, ma'am.
Those of you out there that believe
Okay, it's funny you bring that up. This was going to be an example I was going to bring up later, but I'll bring it up now. I'm in an anatomy and physiology class in college, okay? And so I know, Pam, we're dating, but I haven't started going to church. I'm not baptized or anything, but I'm sitting in there, and we get down to the nitty-gritty in the body. This guy, I mean, we're down like 7 levels, and there's something called ATP, which is what the body uses for energy, and mitochondria, which is the powerhouse of the body. And you get all the way down in there, and this is happening. And I was sitting there in class, and all of a sudden, I was just like, wait a minute. And I had to make the professor stop and say, okay, tell me again where we are, because I was totally lost. That's how deep into the body we were. And he goes, okay, well, there's this, and there's this, and there's this, and there's this. And he goes like 7 levels down, and now we're at this ATP thing. And right there, I had the exact same thought. Okay, there's no way this happened randomly. Okay, somebody had to design this. Here, I'll read the quote. We'll mix the lesson up a little bit. It was coming up faster than I thought. Okay. All right, so here is a man named T.L. Moore. He's a physics professor. This section of the lesson was titled Faith in Creation, talking about evolution versus God design. And here's his quote. As a physics professor, T.L. Moore has written, quote, "To talk of the evolution of thought from sea slime to amoeba, from amoeba to a self-conscious thinking man means nothing. It is an easy solution of a thoughtless brain to believe that we just developed." And it's actually pointed out in here when science tries to prove that we started off as a single cell organism and now I'm standing here talking, having thoughts and, you know, able to think for myself and things like that. There's gaps they can't prove. Science can't prove it, but they keep trying, and they can't prove it. And the only logical explanation is God designed us this way and put us down here. What's that? Very much so. And faith in God and His Word enables us to understand that the universe was formed by God's command and that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. That we didn't just happen and we can't take ourselves back to the beginning and point out, okay, here's step 1, 2, 3, 4. There's steps missing and we can't find them. And I know that God made us. And it's that conviction of knowing that truly defines my faith and makes me believe anything God's going to tell me. Because if He can make me, He sure as heck can unmake me. So anything He wants me to do, I'm going to do. So, question. What do we have to do to please God? Specifically. Keep His commandments, okay. Say again. Trust Him enough to obey Him. Anybody have another way to put it? Yes, ma'am. Seek a relationship with Him? Very much so. I got that out of this study, too. When I think about what do I have to do to please God, I always think, okay, make sure I'm raising Katie and John right. Make sure I'm trying, you know, read the Bible. Make sure I'm going to church. Make sure, not just read the Bible, but, like, actually think about it when I'm reading it. Because that's another good thing about being married to Pam is we're always talking to the kids, hey, did you get your Bible reading done today? You know, what'd you read about? We come home on Sunday, you know, we're always initiating, okay, hey, what'd you talk about in class? And, you know, initiating conversations that way. But she's always asking because a lot of times I listen to the Bible when I work out in the morning. And she says, can you really concentrate on it, though, when you're doing that? Like, are you listening to it? Like, she's always checking on me to make sure I'm doing that. It's actually one of the few times when it's the best time to concentrate with headphones on, and it's just you and somebody reading the Bible to you. It's really nice. I know I remember hearing Sam Bradley when he was teaching a class once. He had a commute to work that was over an hour one way. Wasn't it over an hour one way? And he had the Bible on tape, and he said that was his Bible time, and that's what got to me thinking about, hey, I'll listen to this while I'm working out in the morning. When everything else gets blocked out and you can just focus on it, even when they're telling me who begat who for seven chapters in a row, I can still concentrate on it and stay with it. So, all right, so the way we please God, heroes of faith, the heroes we talked about, the Faith Hall of Fame, heroes of faith were commended or gained approval from God because of their faith and because of nothing else. Their faith in God is what gained them approval. Not anything that they did, not anything that they said, but the way they lived their lives. And without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. That's Hebrews 11:6. And it went into Noah in some detail in my notes. And I need to know if this is true. When God told Noah to build an ark because it was going to rain, he was giving him an incredibly demanding task that would demand total and absolute faith. Obviously, he's going to build this huge thing, right, that no one else is going to help him with. Listen to this next sentence. Noah had no concept of what rain was because rain did not exist before the flood. I didn't know that. It had never rained? Right, okay. I did not know that. So I'm reading that and I'm studying this, and I read that and then I go back and read it again to make sure I read it right. Okay, so forget the fact that he's told to build this thing, this humongous thing on his own, and God's telling him, we're going to wipe out everybody but your family and then two of every animal. But he says, I'm going to flood the earth with rain. And he's never even seen rain. Okay, and he's like, okay. Like, I can't even, like, think of a modern-day equivalent to that. What would God tells me to do something and tells me something's going to happen that I've never even heard of, and I just do it. Yeah, 120 years, right? Yeah. So I'm gonna need you to do this for 120 years, and then it's going to rain, something you've never seen. So, phenomenal. All right, I need a confirmation of that it hadn't actually rained ever in the history of the world. Okay, so heroes of faith were committed and gained approval to God through faith. So we gain our approval from God by having faith in him, by trusting him, regardless of the outcome. I was talking with Todd Watchers when we were eating today, and the fact that how disappointed I am with our president, with our leader, but at the same time that he is our president, which means God put him there. So as disappointed as I am, he's my leader. He's my commander in chief. I can disagree with what he's saying. I can sure as heck, if he tries to take away my religious freedom, I can sure as heck fight that. But at the same time, that's who God put as my leader, so I have to follow. So that's hard. And having that faith, and as Ken said, the track record of always coming through and always doing what is best for us and taking care of us, if I keep that forefront of my thoughts, it helps me get through the next news story that makes me want to pull what little hair I have left out. All right. Without faith, it's possible to please God. We please God when we live by faith. So that's the biggest thing we can do. Have faith in him. Know he's got our back. Know that if we trust in him, study his word, do what he wants us to do, then everything's going to work out. Not going to get what you want. You're going to get what you need. You're going to get what God needs you to do. He's going to take you where you need to go. So, question. Let's define faith. What is faith? They define it in three steps. What needs to happen for someone to have faith? Let's put it in three easy steps. Say it again.
Hear,
believe, repent. First, we come to God, so we hear about him. Somebody tells us about them and we say, okay, I'm going. So whenever that is. For us, that's easy. Now we have to go out and find other people. Other people who haven't heard about it. Second, we believe he's there. So we hear about him and we believe. Third, we count on him to keep his promises. We believe he's done it over and over and over and over. And when we didn't follow him, he's punished us over and over and over and over, which is another frustrating thing about the Old Testament. At some point, do you guys ever get to the point where you're like, oh, come on, please? It just gets frustrating reading that sometimes. Even though I've read it that many times, and I know what's going to happen. I still can't believe that people with evidence. If we were following a cloud through the desert that lit up at night, pretty sure we're going to do whatever the cloud says. I'm sure as heck not going to cry about it not being meat. And I love meat. Love it. Yeah, it's just. And I know it's easy for me because hindsight's 20/20, but wow. The smoky pillar thing is what gets me. I mean, that thing is physically there. I can see it. And I'm still questioning.
And so that gave credibility. It's kind of like a long, long time ago in the Never Never Land.
Evidence. Evidence is good. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Oh, yes, sir. That not just here. Here is easy. Sharing it when I'm talking to my coaching buddies. That's the hard part. Because they look at you weird. His faith, but that's also the Sam Bradley effect. He has that effect on everything. It just chills you out. Anybody not ever felt like $1 million after Sam Bradley got done talking to you? Exactly. Okay? That's who I need to be outside. What's that? Grab both of those. And me having the absolute conviction that I know God is in control of my life is what he needs from me. And the way I can prove that, I guess, is to go out and share that with people and not just get up in front of us and talk. Yes, sir. Thanks. Pam, did you hear that? Sam just said I was maturing. did I miss the bell? Did it not ring? I just looked up. We got like 2 minutes. I know when I'm not teaching, I'm a clock watcher. So, thank you for all the input. Bottom line, through the study and through what we're going to go through this quarter, faith, the absolute conviction, not the belief, the conviction. Not believing that it's going to happen, knowing that our belief in God and that Jesus died so we could get to heaven is the reason for us getting to heaven. And knowing that if we trust him, everything's going to be fine. That's the best thing we can have when we walk out of here. And that's the best thing we can show the world, too, when we're out in the world. So thank you for your attention, and thank you for the contributions.